The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Just a little bit here about the director of today's show before we go on. He went into directing after a religious experience involving a sandbox and a Belgian waffle. Soon after, he developed the world's first edible sand, which he marketed on the program he called Taste the Waste. He currently lives in Dade County with his grandmother and 50 pounds of prunes. I wonder why 50 pounds of prunes.
Because 40 isn't enough.
I know.
It's time once again to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope. Here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cottolo.
Good afternoon, thank you for calling Ships. I may direct your call.
This is me, Frank Cottolo. What's going on?
Pardon?
This is me, Frank Cottolo.
Good afternoon, thank you for calling Ships.
Let
me direct your call.
What's going on?
Hello?
How about a piece of wet leather?
Hello?
See, he's got his fingers into all those things. He knows. What are you saying now? Sorry.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cottolo.
On a world gone mad.
According to my divinations and calculations, Mars is about to run out of air. This is serious! But out there, what will we breathe?
A desperate plan.
Call for the lobster man!
Lobster Man from Mars. What began as a harmless vacation became two young lovers' outer space nightmare.
Then just what do you think, Professor?
I'm convinced that the only kind of life that could survive on Mars would be a giant crab.
Now you are mine!
Mary, are you all right?
Go
S.D. Namath as the dreaded Lobster Man. Deborah Foreman.
Okay, you win. Come and get me, Lobster.
Patrick McNee.
I've suspected for some time that Mars has been suffering from a severe air leakage.
Anthony Hickox.
You don't want to eat Mary. She's got skinny legs, thin bony arms, flat chest.
Fred Holiday.
13th Army Headquarters, Military Intelligence, Domestic Division, Unexplained Phenomena Department, Colonel Ankrum speaking.
M.G. Kelly.
Hungry patrons report finding the place completely deserted, with the exception of two human skeletons. Is this the work of Martians or natural causes?
Tommy Sledge.
That's a story just about as old as this crazy globe. A crazy globe wobbling around on its axis like a drunk with one foot nailed to the floor.
Billy Barty.
Now let's join hands so that our physical contact may prove a conductor of our spiritual energy.
And
Tony Curtis as Sheldrake.
It's the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life. What action. What passion. Wow, it's great.
A film by Stanley Sheff, Lobster Man from Mars. One lobster tale. You won't want to miss.
Tomorrow. I love
that's
you.
That's control over there. You know what I mean?
Love you. Of broadcasting, here is he, right, on this December, it's December already, and I'm here, that's right. This is the program that made the internet broadcasting-wise, what it is today. And that's what it is today. It's me. It's you. And it's philosophical entertainment and relevant irreverence. Lobsters from Mars. Men from thereabouts. Everything that's happening with Dr. Oldar and Sky Hall right here. Stay with us. Smart people are here. Not like people think. Oh, the bouncing ball. Brace yourself. Here we go. Y2K plus 13. 5th of December. Tell him.
Bingo to bingo, Xiu Chun to Dai Si, Ham Sub Nook Jai to Ham Sub Jung Sum. Hi, Cthulhu Chronicles.
Yeah, I know. That's me. That's me chronicling, going along the Hallelujah Trail with me, the original. I'm not the original Frank Cthulhu. There was one before me, but I'm not a junior either. I guess I'd be a second. How do you become a second? You see, a junior for your son, can I be a second? I don't even know, because the middle name's not correct. It's correct, it's right. I don't know, actually, it's not even, but that's a story for another day, another time, another place, and certainly not here. My name is Frank Cthulhu, I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And here we go. Men from Mars, lobsters from Mars. Do you like that lobster from Mars thing that was in the collage, or did you just tune in and not hear it, because I can't play it again? I want to tell you, Billy Barty was in that movie. I know Billy Barty. I know what you're saying right now. Oh, one more? Yeah, and Billy Barty used to stand out, hang out on the corner of Hollywood and Vine with a number of other guys, well, at least one other guy who played a munchkin in The Wizard of Oz on Hollywood and Vine. I kid you not, as Jack Parr did say, I kid you not, Billy Barty and his friend, and I don't remember the other guy's name, but he was also played a munchkin, and he was in all those midget movies, the midget cowboy movies. I'm sorry, did I say midget? I meant little people, the little midgets. How about we split the difference? The little midgets party. And Billy Barty and his friend there, I think they lived at the old actor's home or something, but they were on the corner there waiting every afternoon for the racing form to be delivered to the newsstand. Yes, we had newsstands, kids, boys and girls. We had newsstands, places on the corners, on very busy corners where people bought, newspapers. They didn't have their, smartphones. They didn't have nothing. Speaking of smart, anyway, that was Billy Barty. So Lobster, we're going to be talking about Men from Mars. Frank Atolo, I don't know exactly what it is Dr. Waldar is going to be getting at, so I'm going to be as enthralled as all of you. As Dr. Andrew Waldar from I'm thinking of melanoma. Oh God, that's horrible. I get my words all mixed up because 7,000 thoughts come out at once, and I have to like get in there and like pick one out and make sure that one sentence connect, the beginning of one sentence connects to the end of one sentence. Dr. Andrew Waldar, esteemed, and this is terrible because he's such a good thing. He's got a good sense of humor. He wouldn't even be here. He esteemed. Mental giant and someone who's actually physically smaller, but is himself a mental giant, Sky Hall, who was a, now I don't want to say this. I want to say who was a, procrastinator of Dr. Waldar's. I don't know, a proclaver or what have you. My name is Frank Atolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Old friend of Billy Barty right here. So we're talking about Men from Mars and stuff like that, and I want to tell you about some things that are happening, because this show into Y2K plus 14 is getting itself a tremendous amount of interest, beside from the fact that at SRN here, when we're on live, and we are on live indeed, from ICAP to ICAP, from Hampton City, from Othello, and into every bordello, we are, we're filling up those servers, that server. No, actually, I think there's two. There's one here, one in England. I don't know how it goes back and forth. I'm, as I said in the internet show, I'm just happy to be here and happy we have an internet. I don't know anything about this other stuff. But let me tell you this much, as you continue to mail things, and people say, why don't you just turn that thing off, Frank? Why do you have to, I don't know. I'm not looking at it. I'm paying attention to you. This is the show. This is what we do here, okay? What's going to happen? Unbelievable. We gave thanks to the internet. That was last week. This week, Dr. Waldar, Sky Hall, the Men from Mars. And they're not the Men from Mars, although maybe they are the Men from Mars. I don't know. Now, I just heard that, that we have a reschedule of Steve Olscher on December 12th. He's, because we got to do that. We got to do that some other time because he's and I'm here. I'm dying to know what is your what. We're going to talk about the book. What is your what? And of course, about my book. I don't know what's what. We're going to have that going on. But Steve can't be here by Skype next week, so I don't know. He'll be on safari in the champagnes of deep Africa. So I have no idea if he will even be around. But we'll get Steve Olscher back. So that leaves December 12th, and, you know, it might be a free-for-all. Who knows? We'll do that. Then, on the 26th, not the 28th, I kept saying the 28th, it's not the 28th, it's the 26th of December is the roll call from the Bone Garden, with me and the Artist D, theartistd.com. And I don't even have to tell you about the Artist D, because you know, and you're there, and it all happens, and we do this every year, and you love it, so love it again. Then here's what else is going to happen. You thought that was it? That's not it, because then we got January 2nd, and the Jigs will be here, because the Jig is up. And the beginning of every year for the last, I don't know how many years, because I'm not keeping count, Jiggy Jaguar. Wire. He calls himself Jaguar. It's Jaguar. But that's how they say Jaguar in Kansas. Jaguar. will be here as he is every single beginning of, what a way to start the year, okay? with an incredible Toys Out Show. It goes nuts. And who knows, the Dez will probably be here too, because he usually drops by. And any number of other broadcasting radio zanies who happen to be available will be around. That's January 2nd. Now we're into now January 9th. Yes, that's right. It's something else. Okay, we're going to have, hopefully, Jeremy Long will be here, young and aspiring and talented comedian who's a co-host here now and then. But we're also going to have Ben Cole. Ben Cole is another young, aspiring writer, humorist, and this guy is terrific. And we're going to have this comedy fest. The young guys, and you know, because then you know the young humor. Young humor, you know your generation. Okay, not my generation, but I fit into your generation because I am indeed young at heart. Fairy tales can come true. It can happen to you. And I am there. Ben Cole, funny guy with Jeremy Long, funny guy with me, the guy in the middle. I'm like Larry. They'll be Curly and Moe. I don't know, something like that. But I'll be the senior comedy expert. I'll be the senior, humor, Dr. Humor, the senior professor of, and they'll just be, it'll be fun. That'll be the ninth. Now then we're going to go past, because we're still filling up January. This is, so hurry up, call in or write to me, fcatolo@yahoo.com, if you want to be on the show. We'll just keep booking this. I've never booked anything this show as much as this is happening for some reason. Then the February, listen to this, February 5th, we're not on because it's Wednesday, but on February 5th, I'm going to be on John Matthews' radio show. John, you know, is the ultra-conservative voice of internet broadcasting, who's on every day for an hour and a half or something. Amazing. Hey, I met a guy who's on every day, and you know, I've been on his show, he's been on my show. We yell and scream, but we have a very common ground we're going to be talking about, something that we agree with. Because I don't, you know, he has beliefs I don't. That makes us in contrast at all. Okay, well, I'm going to be on his show on the 5th, and then that's part one. On the 6th, I'm going to continue that conversation on this show, February 6th. So this is monumental. This is internet broadcasting at its best. This is where you should come and be for all of it. That's the Cotolo Chronicles. And why do we do all this? Because the point is digression. Did I not mention, wait a second, I didn't mention December 19th, Tom Savino. Savino Cotolo Chronicles on the 19th. Just because Ulster is not here, we didn't skip right to the 26th in the Bone Garden, the 19th. Okay, let's go over this again, write it down, take out your calendars. Write this down quick, Dr. Fablianic says. Write this down. We got Dr. Waldron Skyhill today. You know that. You're here, okay? December 12th, we don't know, but Steve Ulster won't be on. He'll be pushed back, but he'll be around. December 19th, the Savino Cotolo Words and Phrases. We're going to be talking about the English, like crazy things we say, which aren't crazy, common things we say, which we don't know where they came, where they originated, whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of wordplay. December 19th. December 26th, the fabulous D and me. The D and me at D and I, like the three letters, D and I, roll call from the Bone Garden. January 2nd, the Jigs, Jigomatics, the Jigs, Jigman Freud himself. January 9th, the Comedy Cavalcade with Cotolo, Ben Cole, and Jeremy Long, whose letters doesn't fit in there. And then the 5th on the John Matthews Show, and then the 6th right here on the show, and many, many more things happening as we go along right here. Whew, wow, huh? And we got to Doc and the Sky coming up. Doc and the Sky. We had a chance to Doc and the Sky. But first, these words from our sponsor.
Ray and Garnet, Garnet and Ray have a harness racing show. Check them out on SRN1 Fridays from 9.
Juiced Talk Radio. It's juicy. JuicedTalk.com. Hear Frank Cotolo's Cotolo Chronicles.
Imagine if there were companies that made cookies, and they only got together to make like one, a certain amount of cookies for a certain amount of time, okay?
Transistor by Velvet Steel.
You know, you've got short nipples, you've got long nipples that stick up from the body, you've got big areolas, you've got small areolas, you've got different colors, you've got hair growing off them, you've got everything growing, you've got veiny nipples, you've got all kinds of different things. But for some people, they have really small nipples.
And the Fabulous D Show by me, the Artist D.
You bring this out in me.
I know. And that's why this is so unique, because you could do a million of your own shows.
And I would never do this there, no.
Exactly. You'd never start saying, who did they suck off to get that?
All at Juiced Talk, archived for your listening pleasure. JuicedTalk.com.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
When there's somebody we lost this year, and we will not forget, Rick. We will not forget. We continue in the spirit of everyone, certainly Rick, as we move on. But I want to say something about License to Skill, because recently somebody dropped a review in Amazon, which just made me realize so many different things. Not only the fact that that's a hilarious, and I wish I could read this to you, but I don't have it in front of me. I have to toot my own horn, because I'm horn tooting is what it's all about. You're rooting, tooting, horn tooting right here when you're on the internet. You're selling things, and you're not a member of Simon & Schuster or Paul Simon & Garfunkel or whoever publishes books anymore. So I have to be able to say these things for myself and gulp and continue to talk, running out of breath. It's a wonderful review. Go to Amazon and read this review. It's just great to know that we have that I have something out there that people can appreciate. It's not for everyone, and I don't say that because I want everyone to buy it. Do I want everyone to buy it? Yes. And you have a Kindle, and let me tell you something else too. I discovered this. There is now a Kindle application for your computer, so you can sit and read. If you have a laptop and you can sit and read in your bed, if you don't have a Kindle, if you don't have something you can connect it to, or you don't know how to translate those files to something else, so go get it for two, whatever it is, 99, whatever. This is a book you just won't see. It's true. It's true. I forget about it because I've done so much since then. This is a hilarious piece of stuff, and it's so different, like nothing I've ever read before. Someone would say that a long time ago and get scared because, you know, new things coming out to an audience that's used to redubbed things, and even though it's postmodern in its own, and it draws from many, many different sources, it is put together like nothing you've ever read before. See it before it becomes a film. It may become a film after I'm dead, but we don't know, because there's still people out there reading the script version of it, but we know this. License to Skill is something you want to read, and you want to read it before I decide to publish the complete and unabridged history of Japan, because that is just four times the madness, although it is put in a context of history. But we're not going to go into that. I am going to go into that one of these days, because I think I'm going to publish it online and drive everyone nuts with 800 pages of hilarity. People will actually fall over and they will asphyxiate reading this. But you know, I heard people say when I was passing around to some special people the actual draft. The manuscript, it's called, of, I remember that word, the manuscript of License to Skill many years ago. And people were literally laughing out loud, laughing funny if you can accomplish that in this day and age, it's amazing because, you know, there's classic and then there's pushing the boundaries. Are we pushing the boundaries? Yeah, we're not just pushing the boundaries or pushing the envelope. We're pushing the envelope over the boundaries and we're making the boundaries even larger. So go get it. Get the Kindle application for your computer. Read it on your computer. $2.99. For God's sakes, $2.99? You know, remember, do I have to tell you all this? Do I have to tell you what costs? What gas? 1 gallon of gas costs more? Did cigarettes cost more? Cigars? And pipes. Pipes. Nobody smokes pipes anymore. I don't remember the last time I saw anybody smoke a pipe. Even in places where you can smoke. And you know what I haven't seen either? I haven't seen anybody smoking e-cigarettes in public. What's that all about? I go to places that still have smoking sections. and there's nobody smoking e-cigarettes. Who has all the e-cigarettes? And are they as bad for you as secondhand smoke, third-hand smoke, no smoke, vapor smoke? I don't know. I think this is all just a complete attention-grabbing material. People just want you to listen and read about all this stuff. And you know why? Because it's all probably 10 times as bad as we're saying. But we don't want to go there. We'll just put it into little packages and open them one at a time. Speaking of that, there will be no particular Christmas show. But if you go to my official site at SRN Media Works at 148.ca/Frank, this week is the special Christmas story that has been created and constructed and by me, Frank Cotolo, on my page. And you could also go to the archives and read all the stuff that I'm doing there. Essays, I believe it's every week. Crazy essays, good essays. I shouldn't say crazy, because they're not crazy. I'm most seriously from my heart of hearts and the bottom of my heart of hearts. Now, that's even deeper than your heart of hearts, because your heart of hearts is the heart inside the heart. From the bottom of your heart of hearts is even deeper. So go to 148.ca/Frank. Excuse me, that's my coffee coming up on me. And I remind you, go there and read that. That's free. And then while you're there, check out my books, because there's, you could click on there to find out, buy some books, buy digital books, buy real books. You know, holidays are coming up. Get yourself a Molotov Memoirs, either a digital or a real one, for people you love and know, because they'll enjoy reading this. Wake up. It's night, everyone. And coming up shortly, briefly, and only probably after I finish this particular talk right now, this particular stream of talk, I mean, consciousness, although some people would not consider this conscious, fully conscious, Dr. Woldar and Sky Hall. I don't know, by the way, and I don't know if they're listening off to the side or what have you before I call them. I have no idea how we're going to get a three-way call, but they'll figure it out. And usually I'm pretty good at figuring out three ways, but I didn't this time. Luck, smarts, guts, and hearts. Here we go. Let's get them and start talking about this stuff right here on Cotolo Chronicles. Now, here it is. Who do I call first? Dr. Woldar? I think I call, is this him? I guess I'll call Woldar and see what happens. I should have done a video call. Well, he doesn't have video, though. I do. I have a video now. Who'd have thunk, right? Let's see if he's there.
Hey, Frank.
Yes, Dr. Woldar, right there.
How are you,
man? My good friend, I am proud to say, Norton blocked an attack. Well, there was a malicious attack the moment I called you. Norton just blocked it.
Well, thank goodness for Norton.
Thank goodness for Norton. What is going on here in this world? Now, do you know how we get Sky on this call?
You should have, actually, you just add a call. You could just add a call.
Add a call, he says. Okay. By doing, add a call. Plus. It says plus. Add, send, or share. Okay. Add people to this call. Wow, that couldn't be more simple than that. Look at all these people I don't want to add. I got an amazing amount of people I don't want to talk to right now. I got to get a hold of Sky. Where is he? He's under S. Here he goes. Okay. Add to call Mr. Skyler Hall, which also rhymes. Here he comes. Well, what happened? Skyler?
May take a while.
Oh, okay. In that while, how the heck are you?
Oh, I'm feeling all right. And yourself?
All right. You know, I like answering like that. I like answering all right as opposed to, well, I'm great, or like, well, I'm terrible. It's just all right.
I'm fine and dandy, thank you.
And then, hey, look at how this happens. It's magic. It's a good thing you came in when you did, because Norton blocked an attack.
Oh my gosh.
Say hello to your, I couldn't think of the word before. He was your teacher, Dr. Woldar, wasn't he, Sky?
Yes, he was.
So then he was your...
mentor.
Yeah, I didn't want to use mentor. I wanted to use... starts with a P. He was your professor, but he was your he wasn't your provocateur. That's me. I'm a provocateur. He was your... isn't this a word? It's a P. I can't think of the word. Come on, you guys do college.
Do college.
Don't you know?
I'm not quite sure what you're going for, to be honest with you.
Well,
I was a procrastinator, too.
Okay. Well, anyway, you were Dr. Woldar's student at where? At Villanova?
Yeah, Villanova. Yeah.
I know. I'm trying to forget I said that. I I'm just
good luck.
Good luck on any of this. But here we are, and welcome again. It's been a long time, but I'm sure glad it was sure worth waiting to have you both on again here, because I know that my brain. I've been doing brain exercises all day just to try to follow.
Well, thank you for having us back. It's always a pleasure to be on Cthulhu Chronicles.
Good. Doc, you feeling okay again? I heard you were you had a little couple more pains, though.
Yeah, not pain, just numbness and some tingling, stuff like that.
Numbness and tingling are not pain.
That's right. Yeah, hopefully it'll stay that way.
I didn't think of it that way. Numbness and tingling are not pain. That's like it just the concept just struck me in a strange way. It's like, hey, and like you said, like, you know, Doc's sick again. Really? Where's he hurting? Well, he's not hurting. He's got numbness, and it's not hurting. Just numbness and tingling. Now, tingling's supposed to be good. Isn't this the season for tingling? That's jingling. I'm sorry. Let's move on now, because Doc, you brought up this thing, and I just stayed away from it, aside from many of it, because I want to know what you're talking about. Sky is going to, of course, contribute, as he always does, to this. Do you know what he was talking about with the men from Mars, Sky?
I do, and we're kind of going to talk a little bit about life on Mars and possibly the origins of life on Earth.
Oh, well, who's going to start this one?
I'll let Doc take the lead on this one.
Good, Doc. What was right. it all about?
Well, actually, I'm going to put forth a hypothesis that we didn't have any origins of life on Earth. In fact, we're all really Martians. And this is serious now. This is not that we came over, some kind of advanced aliens and built pyramids.
So this doesn't have to do with that movie. Remember that movie with Gary Sinise? That thing?
None whatsoever. Okay.
So it doesn't have to do with Martians coming here and planting seeds.
Right.
Okay, go. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. Go.
Okay, so this is based on a talk that I attended at the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. It was in honor of Freeman Dyson's 90th birthday. He's a physicist. And one of the speakers, well, the speaker of this talk was Joseph Kirschvink. Kirschvink is a theoretical physicist at Caltech. And the title of his talk was Boron, Ribos, and a Martian Origin for Terrestrial Life. And what I'd like to do is discuss some of the details of Kirschvink's talk. And as I go along, add in some scientific evidence to support his theory.
But he's a real physicist. He's not a theoretical physicist. He's a real
He's a real theoretical physicist.
He's not only a theoretical. There's not a theory that this guy exists. There is actually a subject called theoretical physics.
He is not a theoretical.
You know what I mean?
He's a theoretical physicist.
Okay, so TP is actually a subject.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, my God. Steve, I'm sorry. I'm trying. Go on.
Okay, so anyway, the idea here, the key is planetary differentiation. What I want to do is discuss differences between Earth and Mars going back 4 billion years. So I guess square one would be that we trace the origin of life. The most recent estimates take it back to between 3.9 and 4.4 billion years ago. I'll just say 4 billion years ago.
Yeah, round it off.
Yeah, but there is this half billion year gap we're not sure about. But anyway, the major components that I want to bring up are the magnetic field, something called the redox gradient, and surface conditions. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with the magnetic field and try and explain why you need a strong magnetic field to sustain life. First is a matter of the ozone layer. Basically, the chemistry is this. You have water molecules that react with carbon dioxide, and they form glucose and free diatomic oxygen. And this is all powered by the sun's ultraviolet rays. This is your basic photosynthesis. And photosynthesis is, of course, necessary for life as well.
It's food for plants, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I was...
It's actually a cycle.
That's what they taught me.
Right. So that's fair enough. Now, what happens is some of this diatomic oxygen is going to go in to form ozone. What happens, diatomic oxygen is an allotrope of oxygen, okay? So it's a molecular compound that has two oxygen atoms. And what happens is the light will split this, and you'll get these single oxygen atoms. And some of these single oxygen atoms will form with the diatomic oxygen to make this triatomic allotrope, and that's known as ozone. And the ozone will rise to the stratosphere, and this is an ozone layer, so we have an ozone layer. Now, the reason that an ozone layer is crucial to life, well, it has two functions, actually. First, it acts as a UV screen, protecting the Earth from harmful UV rays.
It's like a giant off. It's like putting off on your body to get so that the bugs don't go on there, right?
Yeah, you can think of it that way.
Sunscreen? I don't know. It's like a sunscreen?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. It's sort of a sunscreen. That's right.
Okay.
Also, the ozone layer is fairly unstable. Ozone itself is fairly unstable, I should say, at high concentrations. So it'll decay to diatomic oxygen and oxygen, and this allows the procedure to keep repeating.
Now, this is Earth we're talking about? The Earth?
This is anywhere.
Anywhere. This is anywhere. So this even happens on Jupiter?
Well, anywhere that doesn't happen everywhere, but this could happen anywhere. So we're talking about where it happens.
Okay, which is Earth, but we're talking about Earth, because I don't want to...
It happens on Earth, but it used
Mars?
To happen on Mars. Yes.
It used to happen. Okay, now that's what I wanted to get straight. Okay, because I want to make sure everybody's following, because I'm trying to... Go ahead.
Right. Well, you know, this is speculation, but the idea here is... That you need the function of the magnetic field here is that it deflects these harmful cosmic rays that would otherwise destroy the ozone. So the point is, if the magnetic field is weak, then it can't effectively do this, and the ozone layer will deteriorate. So what you need then is a strong magnetic field. Okay, it's got to protect the ozone layer. Now, 4 billion years ago, it turns out that Mars, the magnetic field of Mars, was 10 times as strong as that of the Earth. And in all probability, the Earth didn't have sufficient ozone layer, magnetic field to protect ozone. So that's one of the reasons, that's one of the... hypotheses that's used to say, well, it's not likely that when you trace back the origins of earthly life forms to 4 billion years, it's really not all that likely that it happened on Earth, but it could have happened on Mars. And now we move on to something else called the redox gradient. Redox comes from reduction and oxidation. The easiest way to explain it is at the subatomic level, because it's just a transfer of electrons. Oxidation, you're losing electrons. Reduction, you're gaining electrons. So you need what I want to explain is that you need a high rate of electron transfer in order to have photosynthesis. So the basic chemistry is just like before. There's no sense repeating it. But we have a different focus now. See, instead of focusing on ozone, we're focusing on availability of reactants, because you see, you cannot have photosynthesis or any kind of these various processes if you don't have a high rate of electron transfer. So here's the deal with Earth. If we go back 4 billion years ago, the reason that it had here's the situation. Many times in its formation, Earth melted away due to cataclysmic impacts. So what happens is it caused the mantle to oxidize significantly. So all of these minerals, iron, for example, that was in the Earth's mantle would sink down into the core. Thank you. This Mrs. Doc is getting me a cup of coffee.
Hello, Mrs. Doc.
Hello.
The doc needs coffee.
Oh, I always need coffee.
Because he's got to redox his caffeinated
stuff. That's correct.
Okay, back to these...
Situation.
go, yeah, back to the deal now. These are conditions that a lot of us can't explain, or a lot of us are never taught, really, that help or assist in the fact that there is this thing called life on a planet, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, there we go. Okay, now go on.
Okay, so what happens is that you have this situation where because of the melting of the Earth several times over in its formation due to these impacts.
Now, well, let's check the melting of the Earth. Are you talking about being hit by asteroids or something?
What
are
you talking?
Yeah, you're talking about being hit by asteroids and
being hit by
or something.
Comets.
In
fact, it's interesting. 4 billion years ago, Earth really did. There was a lot of impact with comets that came all the way out from the Kuiper zone. And we were
frozen at the time because that was the ice age. Is that it?
Well, no. This is 4 billion. We've had several ice ages during that period of time.
Several.
But this is melting. You know, this is where the Earth would have these impacts and constantly melt, and it would cause convection. The reason, all right. So all the minerals in the Earth's mantle would melt, and they'd sink into the Earth's core, and then those minerals would react with water, and that would produce gas.
Oh, okay.
And this gas could not escape except in volcanic eruption. And this is convection. That's what it is. So the problem with this is that you have carbon dioxide, which is a reactant. It's an essential reactant. It is the reactant to photosynthesis. And you have carbon dioxide and other gases, methane and ammonia, that are vital to life. And they're all trapped under the surface. And the only way that they can come out of the surface is volcanic activity, prolific volcanic activity, actually. Now, the problem here is that if you presuppose that we had this volcanic activity that would release these reactants into the atmosphere where they could actually work and take part in photosynthesis, it turns out that the same volcanic activity would release huge amounts of hydrogen sulfide and sulfur dioxide. And these are heavier gases. So what happened is that your lighter gases, such as ammonia and methane, they would become trapped in a secondary atmosphere. So they still couldn't get through. So the point is that 4 billion years ago on Mars, you didn't have this convection cycle at all. It hadn't been bombarded by all of these comets and asteroids. And thank you. There's my coffee.
And where's ours? Mrs. Waldo. Okay, go ahead. So help you get some more methane gas there.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
Yes, so on Mars you had a high redox gradient because you didn't have this situation. What happened is The minerals and the metals did not sink into the core. They remained in the mantle. And this allowed all of these essential gases I mentioned to be able to form more freely, more abundantly on the surface of the planet. Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's another reason why Mars was much more susceptible, much more capable of supporting life 4 billion years ago.
So 4 billion years ago, you're saying with all this that it is that the conditions for life that as we know it theoretically were happening on Mars.
And they were not happening on Earth.
And they were not, because 4.5 billion years, well, how do we know what was happening? Well, you know what was happening. Was that just theory too? What was happening 4.5 billion years ago on Earth then?
First of all, everything is theory.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
The way they do this, they did these various experiments, and also they did computer simulations and ran them backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they got a lot of this information. The last situation, you have to discuss these surface conditions on the planet. And there are some theories about what the surface of the Earth was like 4 billion years ago, and these theories, they don't look good to support life. One of them is that that the Earth's surface at that time was completely covered with volcanoes and hard volcanic rock, And the problem with that, I just went over that, that you can't get these reactants out into the atmosphere. And if you do get them out, they rise into a secondary atmosphere and they're blocked. Another theory is that the Earth was covered with water, is completely submerged, the surface. But that doesn't work either.
Wow.
Water is necessary for life, but you can have too much of it. And where I'm heading with this is the fact that you cannot have RNA if you have you need a dry surface for RNA to form, because water reacts with it and causes it to polymerize. So you know it forms polymers and breaks apart. So you don't in order to have a consistent RNA strand, you actually need a dry something like a desert actually would be ideal. And now we turn to Mars. It turns out that at that time, not only did Mars have a strong magnetic field, not only did it have a high redux gradient, but it also had all of these conditions on the surface. It had a north pole erosion, which works good as a shallow water basin, which you need for life. It had dry deserts. It had a system of mountains and valleys and craters. So really, you know, it's looking more and more like the chances are that life originated on Mars and came here. And we'll discuss in a moment how it came here.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, but, you know, this is what's called the panspermia hypothesis. This is what Kirschvink honestly believes. It's what a lot of scientists honestly believe, and it's so serious. You know, you can read about panspermia on Wikipedia, for example.
Well, so very simply, what makes them suddenly theorize that Mars had these conditions? I mean, what today can they look at and see there through these maybe through these magnificent pictures and studies they're doing? What gives them this theory? Because I mean, I could sit and say and make up a theory, right? I could say, you know, on Saturn 5 billion years ago there was this, and I mean, how do we know why? Why are they saying this?
It's interesting you asked that question. Mm-hmm. Actually, sorry to cut in, Doc.
That's all.
But I don't know if you recall. Pushing 20 years ago now, there was a meteorite from Mars that was found to have impacted the Earth back in 1996. And when they looked at it under a high-powered microscope, they determined that there were some fossils of microorganisms. And this was on a meteorite that came from Mars. So something smacked into Mars, knocked off a piece of rock, and that rock traveled through space and crashed into the Earth.
Okay.
And so basically what we're seeing is that at one point or another, by what we're determining, there was life on Mars. Now, it may not have gotten beyond the the microorganism stage, but from what we're seeing from that meteorite, it did exist.
Oh, okay. So that answers that question then. So he's using that.
Well, pretty much. I mean, there's a whole lot that goes into theory, and theory is something that can't ever be proved. You know, it's just something that gains power by evidence and by any attempt to repute it failing.
Right, but you got to figure. But like I said, there must have been something.
Absolutely. Well,
that
mainly these.
This, real.
The same question as to how they know what Mars looked like 4 billion years ago is the same as how they know what Earth looked like 4 billion years ago. I mean, they a lot of this was done by computer simulation, based on stuff going forward, being able to make sure that it was good and predictive, and then running it back in time.
Right.
And I'm glad Skylar brought this is what's called jargonically this is called the rogue Martian rock, and he's absolutely right. It had actually fossilized bacterial magnetosomes, and magnetosomes are very important because they occur in higher order species. In fact, they're in your brain. These magnetosomes.
They're in my brain now, right now, even as we speak.
Yes, they are. So, I mean, this is really a clue to this panspermia hypothesis, which basically proposes that life forms can travel. They can survive the effects of space travel.
Oh, even without the special thing, like Superman came in from Krypton.
Yeah, even without that.
Without that.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, the whole idea is that we, as I said, we didn't come over as evolved aliens. You know, we came over as microorganisms stuck in a rock.
I see.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. It's not very romantic.
But wait a second, how, and tell me if I'm getting ahead of you here, but I'm just trying to keep on my level, which is, you know, is very, very low. How come they didn't develop there? Is what I'm saying. Why did they suddenly shoot into the sky and come here?
Well, they didn't. They really didn't have any choice in the matter. But the reason it didn't survive there is because at about 3.5 billion years ago, Earth entered the habitable zone and Mars departed from it. Mars became inhabitable.
Because because all those particular things we talked about in the beginning are gone?
Exactly.
Ah.
The magnetic field began to lose force. There were changes in the atmosphere, a whole bunch of different conditions that determine that just as 4 billion years ago, Earth could not support this life, and Mars could, about 3.5 billion years ago, everything switched.
How do you like that?
So we came on a rock is what the theory is.
We came on a rock?
Yeah, we came over on a rock.
Where did that rock, they theorize... land here. As I use the word land, but I mean, where did it crash? Where did it hit? Where did it?
That's a great question that I do not know the answer to.
Well, they don't theorize. They have any theory on that?
Sky, do you know where it landed?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Where did this rock land? This life-giving rock. Where theorize? Where did it land on Earth? Do you know? Is there anybody theorizing where it landed?
I don't know if they've gotten to that point. The only major impact point that affected life on a global scale on the Earth that I'm aware of is completely unrelated to this. It was the asteroid impact that ended the dinosaurs, and that was down in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico.
And we know that because there's a giant crater there. Or something. How do we know that?
Effectively, I mean, yeah. they've seen a portion of Central America was carved out into I guess it's the Bay of Yucatan or something to that effect. And you can go underneath the water and see a tremendous crater underneath.
Mm. Okay. Where are we now? So now we're saying that the rock had the organisms, and somehow it came here. And
happened to land here.
Why didn't it burn up the way astronauts burn up when it went through the that area there that where people burn up?
Well, a large portion of it probably did.
Oh, okay.
You know, like I said, when you had for example, the extinction event with the asteroid, a large percentage of that asteroid was probably burnt up on entry. But what was left over was enough.
Okay.
And probably the same sort of thing happened with this, whatever particular sort of body came from Mars. You would have had, you know, a large percentage of it would have probably been burnt up on entry, but what was left over was sufficient to do what it came here to do.
Exactly. And they dated it, too. They dated it at 4.4 billion years old.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's okay, so I hope that doesn't end the whole thing. I mean, what, so it came here and then we know, then everything we know happened? The organisms went into the water and then they turned into, and then evolution began?
Yeah, that's correct. It's just, you know, we came, you know, and this is a very, very, very early microbiotic stage. Now, what's interesting is that even as we speak, there is a robotic rover on Mars, the Curiosity.
Yes.
And this was launched about 2 years ago. And right now it's getting all this valuable information about Mars, about the surface. In fact, probably in preparation for a manned spaceflight.
Yeah, they've been talking about that, but I guess they have to find people who will commit for life, right? Because that's a heck of a journey. I mean, that's a long
time. No, it's not.
No, it's easy, right? What am I saying?
just,
I don't know what I'm saying. What am I saying? Does it take 6 months to get there, and then they come, and then they got to stay, and then six? This is like a large part of their life. And then they have to, from what I read, they have to set up circumstances and atmosphere, so that these guys and gals or whoever don't go out of their minds, because there's something very psychological about living in a place like that for 6 months, right? Or is it not 6 months? Am I wrong?
Traveling there especially. Don't forget there will be some time dilation, not a whole lot.
Yeah, a little bit. That's right. That's right.
They'll make the trip shorter than you think. Now, the conclusions, this is what's interesting to me, the conclusions of what they find from all of this matter that the Curiosity will be gathering off the surface of Mars, scientists will have, they'll draw different conclusions from it.
Mm-hmm.
For example, those who subscribe that earthly life had to have started with on Earth, they're going to say, hey, look, we explored only as far as the neighboring planet, and look what we found, another life form. And so they're going to actually lean toward the conclusion that life in the universe might be rampant because they found two different life forms, you know, so close together.
Mm-hmm.
But scientists, on the other hand, those who subscribe to panspermia hypothesis, they're going to say that these two different life forms are not different at all. They're one and the same.
Mm.
So their findings, they're going to take the findings and they're going to say, well, look, the universe is still limited to just one microspecies. In other words, it's just as rare as we thought it was before we went into all of this. You know, so the conclusions would be very different. But what the panspermia hypothesis believers would like to see is actually DNA testing. They'd like to see some of these samples that come back, you know, rock and ice samples. And they want to do the DNA testing and see, they want to compare it to human genome test sequencing. Because if the DNA matches, that's going to be huge evidence that we actually came from Mars. It's highly unlikely that you talk about two different life forms that evolved from two different origins and their DNA matches. So, yeah.
Well, I got something to add. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. No, that's what it's all about.
Okay, we're here with Dr. Andrew Woldar, of course, and Sky Hall from Villanova. I'm sorry now I say it. I said it right? Villanova, right?
Villanova.
Nova. What is wrong with me? Nova. We're talking stars and everything like that. I can't think of Nova.
Well, I think Skyler.
Villanova is land of is that is what land of
said it right once and Skyler changed it on you.
Land of the sun.
Right? No, Villanova would be the new town, new city.
Nova being new, as in like Neo, so it could be Villa Neo too. But
okay. Well, depending upon what language you're going from, Nova is Italian, not Italian, Latin.
Latin, yeah.
Neo would be Greek.
That's Sky Hall. He went to the villa. I just got it. I just said villa now, I guess. And then I'm chronicling again, Cthulhu Chronicles. And this may be, now I don't know where else you're going to be listening or what else you're going to hear or what other channels you're going to watch, whether they're TV or cables, not cables, cybers or whatever, but you ain't going to hear this anywhere tonight. And then with the theory that we came from Mars, that the actual life force that is us has originated from conditions that were like this on Mars. This is actually an exclusive. Weren't there cameras and stuff when that guy was talking there? How come we didn't hear anything about this?
You can find his lecture on YouTube. The problem is the sound is very, very low. That's why I was glad I was there. It's on YouTube.
It wasn't low there, though. He had a microphone there. Is that it?
Yeah.
But the microphone wasn't connected to the people recording it, so they didn't get it.
That sounds like what happened, yeah.
Does he talk like that? Because he said he's old, right?
No, he's not old. Well, he's probably, well, you know, you ask me. I mean, by my standards, everyone's young.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I would say he was probably around 60.
Well, he's younger than us.
I apologize if he's listening. I certainly apologize if he's younger.
He's younger than us, though.
Yeah, he is younger.
So we shouldn't have to apologize, because either way, we're older. So.
Well, not, and Skylar's a baby. But,
That's right. I'm sorry. Why do I do that? I'm sorry, Skylar. I didn't mean to advance your molecular system.
That's quite all right.
This is Cthulhu Chronicles on Y2K plus 13, and today's December 5th already, and that's what we're talking about. Now what I'm saying is this, I actually forgot the question I was going to say, but you bring up something that, what doors, let me ask you guys, what doors does this theory open in terms of anything we know, life as we know it? Sky, you want to start?
We do have to re-examine. First of all, it reminds us that things that we think we know, we may not necessarily know as well as we think we do.
I do that every day, even when I make breakfast. That thought, you bring up a thought there that is constantly on my mind anytime I hear any piece of information, and maybe it might have been the problem of my educational deficiency from the beginning. I say there's a billion different ways of looking at everything. Now, what you just said doesn't just refer to theories, but go ahead, say that again, exactly as you just said it.
Well, I don't know if I can get exactly
everything.
Things that we think we know about the universe, whether it's, you know, on the microbiological scale or all the way up to, you know, supergalactic clusters, we have to take those with a grain of salt and understand that we may not know everything that we think we know.
That's it. We may not know everything that we think we know. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And plus, the more we know, the more we don't know.
Well, ask one, and give me one thing that we thought we knew that is changed by the possibility that these organisms came from Mars.
We thought that life originated, that Earth life originated on Earth.
Yeah, that's the obvious one. But I was thinking like, but the obvious, that's it, really. Then what else is there?
What else is there, then? If it so happens that panspermia hypothesis goes through, and this is an indication of it, then one has to wonder how far life could have traveled. And what other,
right. So these things could have gone the other way and kept going.
Skylar knows a lot more about this than I do, but there's actually a Titan, which is one of the moons of Jupiter.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
Saturn.
There's a place where life actually could, they're starting to talk about, could life actually exist there?
And there's that other planet they found that was with a star. I read a little bit about that one. We talked about that, didn't we? Where they said, the conditions are perfect for life here?
Kepler 22.
Yeah, it's right. Got one of those numbers. When do they stop and call it like Klep Carniar or something? Why do they do that with the numbers and stuff? Just to keep files?
They have to catalog. There's just too much out there. You run out of names if you don't start cataloging.
Run out of names? You mean to tell me they found more things than they could name? That sounds like England.
I mean, technically, if you go by real naming convention,
yeah.
Earth is Sol 3.
Sol?
SOL. It's the
sun, third from the sun.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's me.
You know, we don't normally call it that because it's just more convenient to say, you know, Earth. But we could very easily say that, you know.
Oh, so we have a catalog number too, you're saying, right?
Exactly. Okay. Everything really does have a catalog number. We just don't use them in common parlance.
So is it possible that Titan has some things going on or that is it possible that if there was life on Titan, it would have known it, because didn't we have something going out there and it went past Saturn?
We did have the Cassini probe head out towards Saturn and Titan. I don't know to what degree they looked into the rocks and whatever on Titan. So maybe just some further exploration is required there.
Maybe they just dropped fashion tips. It was the only Cassini. Anyway.
Here you go.
Here's how you should dress.
Aside from Titan, you also have a moon of Jupiter called Europa.
Yes, Europa, which even sounds like, in a way, Europe. It sounds like Europe.
And it is it's basically a large ocean. It's a planet that is mostly water, or at the very least liquid of some sort or another, covered by a rather thick sheet of ice. And again, not necessarily water ice, but various sorts of frozen liquids.
But they don't have those conditions out like the doc explained in the beginning.
Well, not on the surface, but the water underneath might, they believe, might be able to support life as well. So if we were able to get down through the surface, through the ice on Europa, we might find something beneath the surface there as well.
Did you not know Ole Cassini? Did that reference go, because you're younger than us?
Straight over my head.
Yeah, okay, I thought so. Okay. I knew I'd get a rip out of Doc, but anyway, it's okay that you don't know Ole Cassini. There's plenty of things I don't know. Plenty.
Also, I want to mention on Titan, they actually believe that they have water on the surface.
Correct.
Water on the surface.
Yeah.
And the atmosphere is not too far off from what would be able to sustain life as well.
It's just, it may be, it, so is it, if I sat back and I thought this thought, well, maybe it's just taking centuries for it to develop there. Would I be far from wrong?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
The only problem with Titan and with Europa is because they are so much further from the sun, the energy input from the sun to those locations might be low enough that it doesn't, you know, doesn't do what we need it to do. That's why Earth is in the habitable zone and Mars is not, let alone the further out planets and moons.
So, but we don't know, obviously, that beyond our own, and let me get this straight here, in a universe or galaxy, what am I saying wrong? Which one? Beyond our own universe or beyond our own galaxy? What am I saying?
It would take some talent to get outside of our own universe. So I think
the galaxy. Okay. Well, beyond that, though, where we don't know, what we're saying is it is possible that these things, these elements, all these things are going on somewhere. And this also tells us, doesn't this also tell us, almost beyond the shadow of a doubt, that elements that we understand and science that we understand that keep this green ball turning and life here doing whatever it does, developing or deconstructing or whatever, doesn't this tell us that way, way, way out there, which is probably the stupid way of saying scientifically, trillions or zillions, way, way, way out there, that the components of galaxies and universes or whatever are all the same?
To a certain degree. Yeah. I mean, you have, you know, all of your various elements are still comprised of protons, neutrons, and electrons.
Yeah.
You know, all of your, you know, for example, all of your basic molecules are formed by the same combinations of those atoms. You know, and you can keep on going up the scale, you know, to where planets are, sorry, suns are, you know, comprised of hydrogen and helium and some other stuff. And the solar systems have that, you know, suns and planets and moons and galaxies have a whole bunch of solar systems. And you can keep on going all the way out.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is a certain uniformity in the randomness.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's a heavy thing. Why do you think that is not really, now that we know that, why doesn't everybody know that? Why does everybody still play around with things and thoughts about where we have so much incredible knowledge? How can we sit back? Is it because we don't want to believe what we know is true or what we think is true?
I think people are too content in their own misconceptions to listen to the fact.
Yeah, I think there's a complacency here too. Mm-hmm. The information is out there. But you, in order to find it, you have to be motivated. You know, and then when it reaches the media, and I think, you know, on one hand, it's good to see that scientific news is in the media very often, but more often than not, it's it lands up being in misconceptions and misinformation.
But we're dealing with generations now that are bombarded. It's pretty hard to not run into a lot of information that we didn't run into before, which kept us, which kept many people believing in things they didn't, you know, that were totally theory.
But the problem, Frank, is that these days most of the information that people are bombarded with from one day to the next is what Miley Cyrus is wearing at the VMAs and all this other highly unimportant stuff in the grand scheme of things that they're distracted.
Well, that may be what they focus upon, but the fact that it exists and it's there and you can sit and do it is far more common now with this digital generation than it was when we didn't have the ability. If I had a question about something that was either spiritual or religious or space or science or anything, when I was a kid, I had to go to a library. I went to the library, I looked it up, and I didn't get things because they didn't know that much. And there were people scared to say anything about stuff that might not have been popular. So it wasn't even available.
Frank, right. Skylar answered your question, really. The point is, yes, you're right. With the internet, there is all this information is out there. But what he's saying is that with the internet, you have more distractions as well.
What's the matter? You don't like that wrecking ball thing? I thought it was pretty good. What's wrong with Miley Cyrus on the wrecking ball? I thought that was pretty good. No, I know what you mean. I'm joking.
The information is certainly out there, but you have to have people who are motivated to look for it.
Nobody would agree with you more than me, because I know, I understand, more than I, because I understand what you're saying, and that's right. Motivation is a great deal. You got to, even if it's there, you got to find it. And of course, denial is such a great part of human behavior that people care to know. And we're talking about stuff here that I'm sure any number of people would love to just, if they were listening for the first time, would say, I'm not listening to that show again. They're talking about people coming from Mars and organisms. That's junk, right? I mean, without even looking into it.
Hey, there's a good number of people that would do that. Yeah. I'm hoping it's not the majority, but it probably is.
I think it is, too. Okay, so let's go back to this place that makes people turn off the show, regular people, because we have a special audience here at Cthulhu Chronicles with Dr. Waldar and Sky Hall. Hey, Sky, how come you never became doctor?
I have to go through master first.
Why didn't you do that?
It's kind of a big, long story, but the bottom line is that when I went for my bachelor's degree, which is what I ended up with, you had to, as part of the graduation requirements, get published in a scholarly journal. And so you get a taste of what research is all about.
Yeah.
And in doing it, it didn't turn out to be what I was kind of expecting it to be. You know, I have all sorts of fun playing around with theories and whatnot in my head, but sitting down in front of a computer and crunching numbers for 8 to 12 hours a day and not accomplishing anything that involves imagination to me, it's not as thrilling as I was hoping it would be. So I saw it through because I was already in senior year and I made it to my bachelor's degree and decided that was kind of as far as I really felt I needed to go.
Very, very bad excuse. I want to go on record. I encourage Skylar to go for his PhD.
He certainly sounds like he can. He could get there.
He had what it takes.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't have what it takes.
And the problem here is that he worked on some research that was obviously mundane. But you just as well can apply. There's a lot of research which is totally theoretical work and very imaginative. And I think he just got a taste of the wrong kind of research.
That's entirely possible.
I still encourage you to go for your PhD.
I didn't mean to put you on trial, Sky. This is not what I wanted to do.
This is one I've become used to over the years. Don't worry.
But I just think that the people who have the breadth with the D, I have to tell people, the breadth of your academia would go further. Than that. Not that there's nothing wrong if you don't. I mean, I'm like, you know, I just.
It's almost one thing that you and I have in common, Frank, believe it or not.
Good.
Is I think you and I both have more of a desire to have a breadth of knowledge rather than a depth of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather know a little bit about a whole lot of things than a lot about just one thing.
That with you, it's a conscious decision. With me. It's organic. but in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, the doctor and Sky are telling him, let me remind everybody else at Hotspot Radio, Sky, if you want to hear the other side of Sky, or some of the other things that Sky does pay attention to in the world, Hotspot Radio, which plays, and you have your own little random music generator going on there, don't you?
I do, except it's not so random. It's my listeners.
Yeah, see, that's good. So what do you want to hear? Hotspot Radio will give you what you want to hear Wednesdays at SRN You get Hotspot Radio. Okay, so where do we go from here, Doc? Now that we assume this, what else did he talk about in reference to us coming from organisms from Mars?
Well, that's about it. I mean, as far as what Kirschmink mentioned, the fact that panspermia hypothesis might be a very legitimate theory based on whether or not DNA testing on Mars surface samples, if that can match some human genome.
When are they going to do that? Do they have any plans to do that?
Yeah. All this is going on now, and if they can build more evidence for panspermia hypothesis, then you have to wonder about life coming to various planets. There's even a theory I should mention besides Mars. There's another theory during what I mentioned earlier. It was called the heavy bombardment period.
Yeah.
Which was a long time ago, obviously 4.4 billion years ago. So you had comets that ranged in size from 1 mile to approximately 20% the size of the Earth that were coming very close to the Earth's orbit. It's no longer the case now. Now comets are quite rare compared to then. But one can also apply panspermia hypothesis to say, well, microorganisms could have traveled safely, you know, on rocks embedded in or shielded by ice. And, they could have landed anywhere. And then it's up to the particular specifications and conditions of the planets on which they land as to whether life would continue to evolve or not. So, yeah, it's just one example of a very broad theory that's gaining a lot of celebrity.
That how come it's taken them so long with the DNAs? Why would it take them so long to figure out to find? Isn't that DNA testing? Isn't that, like, easy now?
We don't have everything. They don't. They have this one particular mentioned earlier, Sky mentioned it. It's what they call the rogue Martian rock that's 4.4 billion years old. They already were able to identify certain things about it, but I do not believe that they were able to establish anything as far as DNA testing on it. They did find out that it contained these magnetosomes, which are in the brain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that doesn't, you know, send off a bell, you know, if that's not some sort of sentinel for the possibility of panspermia hypothesis, I don't know what is.
Huh. So, okay. Okay. Where are we with this now? We have, what do you believe? I mean, do you believe when you hear these theories and stuff, and you go hear these guys talking and stuff? Do you walk out and just go, "Well, I think I have 30% of that that I would," or do you actually sit back and go, "Yeah, I think that's it"? I mean, do you guys hear anything? You read the stuff and sit back and go, "Oh, that's it. That's the one."
I don't know how many scientists will go, you know, sit back after a thing and say, "Oh yeah, that's definitely
it." Yeah, they don't do that. See, that's it, right? They don't.
You know, it's like we said before. You got to take everything with a bit of a grain of salt. And if they provide, you know, compelling data and compelling arguments, you certainly give that a little more weight than, you know, something some lunatic on the street tells you about where life came from.
Some lunatic on the street. I love that. Or some lunatic who happened to have been my teachers in any which what way.
I think Fabliani was probably a great teacher.
Oh, Dr. Fabliani was an amazing teacher. It's just that I don't know who he taught. He didn't teach. I didn't learn anything. I couldn't even.
That's because you didn't write anything
down? I couldn't write it down quick enough. I told you the eraser followed the jug. But, you know, that's how he tested us. If he was still alive, he could help this guy actually prove that life is from other planets. I always thought he was a Disney plant. You know, I always thought this really wasn't, because he was a template of crazy, you know, crazy physicist scientist guy. I mean, you know, I mean, this guy was like right out of a movie. But then again, cliches are, you know, based on, you know, darn straight things, real things, correct?
Yeah, I think they are.
So in our lifetime, we're not going to know anything. Is that it? We know so much more. We know. We found the life. We found the God particle, and you know, and we found him. But what's going to happen?
Well, you know what? You know, when you say in our lifetime, you kind of have to be a little more
specific
than that, because, you know, I think probably unless you're planning on you know, conking out in the next 20 years or so, there's a good chance that we might actually have a manned mission land on Mars.
Well, I don't plan such things. I'm not that kind of person. I'm not planning.
Then we'll have to put you on the Bowdoin Garden. I don't know how that'll work.
No, I'm not planning, but, you know, a lot of things are beyond my control.
Sure.
But that would be fascinating. Do you agree with that, Doc?
Well, absolutely.
So we can have guys and gals. Now they have to send guys and gals, don't they? Don't they have to?
I would think so, because I know that at least one of the planned missions to Mars is talking about a one-way trip.
A one-way trip? Explain that.
In other words, they go there and then they would simply stay there and try to make it into something that's going to be habitable for at least them. I don't know to what degree they'll have resources to make it, you know.
Sounds like a Twilight Zone. This is a virtual Adam and Eve type thing.
You wouldn't catch me taking a one-way trip to Mars.
Well, not at our age.
Yeah, true.
Although I'd like to be the guy who's on television. I do not have low testosterone. Thank you very much and good night. Okay. I hate those commercials. But anyway, they'd have to send a guy with high testosterone. No, yeah, with high testosterone. And now they would do that. Would they send a man and a woman for? Would there be any procreation involved in sending them one way? I mean, what are they thinking?
Well, I mean, it depends on what sort of supplies they send them up with. Because I don't know if the idea is just have them continue to work as long as they're physically capable of doing so, and then, you know, whatever, or if they're actually talking about trying to terraform part of the planet that they can start a new civilization.
What's the delay time talking if someone was on Mars and here talking to people here?
That's a very good question. Give me a second. I'll find that out for
you.
Okay.
You know what I mean, Doc? I mean,
that would be speed of light. So, I mean, it wouldn't take that long. Scott will have the answer in a second. I'm sure he's researching it.
How could it be the speed of light? We can't travel. If we could travel the speed of light, we could be there.
Communication.
Oh, communication.
You're talking probably about 4.5 to 5 minutes delay.
Okay. That's quite a delay. Although in the early days of internet broadcasting, we had such a delay. Those modems have sure changed over the years, so I imagine talking to Mars in 5 minutes, I shouldn't complain. Do you see how spoiled we are now because of all this stuff? I'm sitting here going, 5 minutes? What? I can't figure that out? That's too long! Anyway, so you don't know. Where did you hear about this particular one-way plan, Doc? Oh, well, that wasn't Doc, that was you? Scott, who said that?
That was me, I think, actually. I mean, there's a couple different proposals. I mean, the European Space Agency is talking about landing sometime between 2030 and 2035. And then the NASA is talking about doing something as well.
Is there still a NASA? I heard they have all these private rocket ships going up. There was a launch the other day. Another communication satellite went up. And it's by a private company. What does NASA do anymore? You mean NASA's sitting around? They don't have any money? Are they sitting around planning a Mars mission? They don't have any money? Wouldn't it be a shame if the darn thing gets half the way there? And then they go, hey, sorry. Really? I mean, we tried. We did our best. See you. So good night, everybody. And what? How are they going to? That's going to cost a whole bunch of money. Are they planning that now? Or are these just theories?
Well, the one I was talking about is a mission called Mars to Stay. And the idea, from what I'm reading here, they're talking about actually setting it up to be the beginning of a new civilization. The only reason that they would return is if they absolutely had to for emergency reasons.
Emergency reasons? What does that mean?
I would
they're
going
to die?
I'd imagine that would be like medical things or scientific circumstances that would allow them to not stay safely anymore.
So here's the report. Kurt Frisbin, the first man who went on the one-way trip to Mars, was notified today when he said that him and his co-astronaut wanted to come back. And they said, sorry, you didn't read the small print. It says there that regardless of emergency, regardless of implosion you can't come back. You could never come back again. So, do you know who I was imitating, Sky? Who was I trying?
It was somewhere in between Cosell and Cronkite.
Okay, good, okay. I wanted to make sure we had a pop reference there. Did you know?
It was Cronkite?
It was concrete. I think it was trying to do concrete, whatever.
I did hear Cosell in there, too.
Cosell. Now, Cosell. That was how he talked. Why am I suddenly getting on stage doing bad imitations?
I don't know, but I like it.
We're talking about here. Did everyone hear my Lee Harvey Oswald when we did the Kennedy show? Did everyone hear that one? Well, you know, I mean, that's an original. Listen, if there was one and they went and came back, let's go. I want to go back to this time thing. How much of the time change would there be? Would they come back a year younger, a year older? How does that work?
No, they wouldn't come back. It would just be a matter of minutes because they're not attaining anywhere near light speed.
But they would have to adjust their watches.
Yeah, that's right.
So and even if they were digital. Now, would the digital ones, would they know like they do on New Year's Eve?
The atomic clock?
Yeah, if they were digital things, would they know when they came back? They just, we got to add 5 minutes. Like, that's the way a digital thing talks. Yeah, to itself? Would it know? Because I don't even know how that happens. How does it know when it's time to change it, you know, Eastern Daylight and stuff like that? How does that work? Is that the atomic clock doing that? How do your computers know?
You have atomic clocks.
See, daylight savings is completely arbitrary. That's determined by the government.
Yeah, but it does. It changes. On your computer, it's correct. It changes correctly at 1 p.m. At 1 a.m. it becomes 2 a.m. or 2 a.m. becomes 3 a.m.
The computers know when, what day, and what time they need to adjust their clocks.
Okay, so if we went to Mars and came back, they would know. Would they know?
If they had an atomic clock,
is it really important? Is this really important? No, this is
not really.
Okay, we're with Dr. Waldar Skyhall, and unfortunately me as the third part of this discussion on the fact that it is possible that the very same conditions that gave us life on Earth once happened on Mars, and therefore the men from Mars are actually the men in the Earth right now, theoretically, because those microcosms were sent over here. Now, I don't know how they decided to get the hell out of there. That I didn't get. Maybe we can go back to that, or did I miss that? Why did they leave? Did they jump onto these rocks, and then the rocks said, let's go somewhere? I mean, how did that happen?
This is pure accident.
Yeah. Oh, it's accidental. So something blew up, and then they went?
It was just a pure accident. I mean, they just happened to be on the surface, and a portion of the surface broke off due to bombardment.
That's right. The bombardment has something to do with that. Okay, fine. I like it, and I think I'm going to buy it.
Okay.
Because for a long time, even though I question everything, as I mentioned before, I certainly question the things that they say about life on Earth. That there seems to be, whether or not a big bang or anything like that, but doesn't there seem to be, to those of us who are less, who do not have the acumen available for such thought in terms of the specifics and the details of scientific thought and theory, I always said to myself, and I've said this to others too, not just to myself, although I've said it to myself while others were around and that got me into trouble. But here's the deal. Life just suddenly starts now, you know, just like that. And I think that's why people way back, you know, civilizations who still do that, you know, look to the heavens because they don't really understand. I mean, they say, like, how did this happen? It had to be something else that is way beyond our control because we're so out of control on this planet. And by the way, I think the last major tribe in the Amazon is now searching for somewhere to live. Do you believe this? There's like there's one left. I can't even imagine who was responsible for clearing this gosh damn place that there's only one tribe down there left. And what good did Sting do? He did nothing. Nothing. For all that work and all that money and all that ridiculous writing the same song over and over and over again. Why didn't he do something? Couldn't he? He tried, and he should have spent more time on that and less time on rewriting Roxanne. but that goes to show you. I think I bring that up also for the fact that not for an ecological thing, but you know what I mean. What happens to us and this planet is totally insignificant compared to everything else out there. But we have nothing else to do except look at ourselves, correct? And except for the people, and there are choice few who are looking out there and finding possibly places where there could be other life, and possibly places where there, and they're finding more and more evidence because they're seeing things. They're going further than they ever could. That's all part of the digital revolution, isn't it?
Absolutely. And to me, the other important part of this, and this is, I know you're always looking for the answer to the question, well, why do we care? And to me, you know, the fact that we came from somewhere else to here means that we can reverse that process. We can go somewhere else as well.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of learning what we need to do in order to be able to do that. Because, you know, I'll be honest with you, we've only got about 5 billion more, not that it matters much to us, because we're going to be long gone.
You're talking about the sun exploding?
Well, it's not exploding, but
burning out?
But before that, it's going to expand to engulf the Earth.
Yeah.
And that's just going to be a really bad time for anyone who happens to still be here.
For sure. You're not going to be able to. It doesn't even matter if someone has a, excuse the expression, hot air conditioner. It's not going to matter if there is any civilization here at all in 5. What did you say? 2 billion years? How many years?
About 5.
5 billion.
Say no amount of sunscreen or ozone is going to do you any good. The first step is going to be getting us to maybe, in my opinion, I would say colonize the moon. Then from there, start working on Mars. And then from there, go towards the outer solar system. And then we can talk about traveling interstellar distances.
Because we got to get out of this. We got to get out of this. This thing that has been our life source for billions of years is eventually, even that has a life and a time span.
This too shall come to pass.
And that's going to go. It's going to fizz out, and then there's still going to be millions of – so you're saying if we could build the knowledge and the, obviously, equipment to be moving on, we can get away from this sun, and it could actually be like – because you know what you have here, Sky, is a great idea for a science fiction novel.
Oh, it's been done a million times already.
Except you'll be sued for plagiarism.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying, is that what you're saying? That we would build and get out of this place?
Basically, I mean, it needs to happen. I'm not going to say it needs to happen in the next 100 years, even 1,000 years, but we need to be working in that direction because we have the beginnings of the brain power on this planet to be able to make it happen. And until we stop being so preoccupied with unimportant things, whether that be celebrity, whether that be religious differences, political differences, right. Cultural differences. We need to get past all of that if we want to have any hope of surviving the end of the solar system and the end of the Earth.
And we definitely have to repeal Obamacare.
We're not even going into politics. I know the Canadian broadcasting rules. I'm not even touching it.
No, I'm joking. I don't know. I don't even. I don't literally look. I think I'm as healthy as I am because I just don't care. But. But I think this is a fascinating to go into, and I wonder what is this doc this the guy who gave the speech Well, let's look at this. Let's give the information out to anyone. You say it's on YouTube, and his name, why don't you spell his name out so that people can find him? Or does he have a web page where he does these things or talks about these things? Or is there another science web place you could go and learn about this stuff?
Yeah, I actually don't know if I can give you his name. I mean, you know, do you have the actual URL?
I don't have anything.
Kirschman.
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
One at a time, guys.
I'm going to give you a short version because the regular YouTube ones are ridiculous. So I'm going to give you a Bitly address. So one second. I'm just going to plug this into Bitly and get a shorter version. It is going to be bit, which is bit.ly/1, C as in cat, D as in dog, both lowercase, capital Y, lowercase S, capital F, lowercase T as in Tom. So bit.ly/1CD, capital Y, lower S, capital F, lower T.
Capital E, capital R. What was that? Was that something just clicked in my head? Capital E, capital R.
Give that again, Sky.
Okay, it's bit.ly/
the number one,
lowercase CD, uppercase Y, lowercase S, uppercase F, lowercase T.
Correct.
Excellent.
Capital I, capital E, capital – oh, I was thinking of something. I don't know. The thoughts are just pouring out again.
Let me spell his last name for those of you who might want to search him out. Capital K, obviously. Mm-hmm. IRSCHVINK.
Okay, just say V?
Yes, KIRSHVINK.
Kirschvink.
Kirschvink.
Mm-hmm.
Kirschvink. Now, Kirschvink, the origins of the name Kirschvink are of German and Russian. He's a Glaciano. Is that it? He's a Russian Jew or German Jew? He's a German Jew. Kirschvink.
I would certainly guess Russian before.
Russian. German. Russian Jew.
Yeah.
That would be a Glaciano.
That's a guess.
No, it's a Glaciano is a Russian Jew, right? And a Ludwak is a German Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Right. See, I actually know that one, guys. So if there's ever anything I say that you don't know, please let the audience know.
Oh,
what?
What? No, you don't count because you didn't know Ole Cassini. So that didn't count. Here at Cotolo Chronicles, we're the only place you're going to hear about this life may have been from Mars, right here. And you can go, and for those of you who missed part of the show and didn't want to, because many of you do that, or want to hear it from the middle to the end or whatever, and you go to Juiced Talk Radio in the next couple of days, and you can download it for absolutely free. Also, at CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, on the bottom of each entry, you could find out where the show is rebroadcasted. So in case you're running around somewhere, and you're with your iPhone, smartphone, or whatever you got, your iPad, or your tablets, or whatever it is you use while you're out there, you want to stop and listen. You might be driving along and go, oh, look at that! It's time on Hotspot. It's time for Cotolo Chronicles, and I missed part of it. That's going to happen. But anyway, you can try that, and then and do that, and get it because you might want to hear all of this, but you're not going to hear it anywhere else. And that's true, too, because nothing's going to happen. And yet there are going to be people tomorrow talking about this. We don't know who those people might be or what have you. And Dr. Kirschvink, I said that without a chuckle, because he sounds like one of the characters in one of my nutty books. Kirschvink! Kirschvink! To the corner, please! To the front, Kirschvink! What is Woldar anyway? Woldar. Did I ever ask you this before?
I think you might have. It's shortened from Volodarsky.
Oh, okay. So
it's a Ukrainian name.
Oh, so you have roots in the Ukraine.
Absolutely. Both my father's parents.
And when you were there then, we did that show, that great show, when you told us all about your trip to Russia, did you run into anyone? Did somebody walk up when you introduced to somebody? Did they go, "Volna, that's Volna Heshkovin," and they knew you because of that?
Well, actually, my colleague, during my first trip there, I stayed with him in Kiev, and he lived on Volodarskaya Road. So,
isn't that something?
Yeah, that's a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah. One day I'm going to go into the, one day I'm going to do a show on the origin of my name, because it goes back to very strange places.
Even the origin of names in general would be a great show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because, and then, and there too, we would have to be able to, you know, I don't, again, there too, as much as I'm told by sources through the generations, and I didn't go to Ancestry.com. Has anyone gone to Ancestry.com? Does that work?
I have. I actually traced my family tree back pretty far on there.
How do you do that? What kind of documents pop up that help you verify that they're related to you?
They go through things like census records. They do immigration records, obituary records, that sort of thing. And then you also can plug in anything that you might have as well. The other part that's kind of cool is if you happen to link up with somebody who's a part of your family very far off, mm-hmm. it'll say, "Do you want to share your tree with them? Do they want to share their tree with you?" And now all of a sudden you've got a lot more information to work with.
See, I have problems because I have relatives, specific relatives. Like I bought this one guy. The family tree went back to a certain point, and there was this one guy, and he was he died and buried, but he was buried in 12 different places. So there was a problem putting it back.
Wait, Cotolo, that he was part of the mafia, wasn't he?
Well, mafia is a broad statement, I'd say. But Will, I didn't mean to go into
that's
that.
Actually,
but
actually, Sicilian mafia is Sicilian. Is Cotolo Sicilian or Italian?
Well, it's Napoli, as I say. It's from Naples, but it did go south. It settled.
Sure did go south. Oh,
it settled. There was a lot of junk that went on because the main guy went down there. Got his name for being very bad with knives, because Cotolo, of course, means knife. And it means couteau is in French, and Cotolo, Cutolo, and that's where the word the English word cut comes from, Cutolo, because my name is actually cut, Cutolo.
Oh,
I see. But I didn't mean to start that show now here, 20 minutes to this, because there is a connection to it though, because those guys also came from Mars. So that
actually, if you're the one who brought it up, I'm going to
yes,
just say it.
Go Mars ahead. Cotolo. Mars. Oh, that's right. That's yeah, right. And then they gave me. That's right. I didn't even think of that because I had this nickname in Hollywood of Mars.
Didn't that start with Wolfman Jack?
Yes, it did. Well, it started with me, but he's the one who started calling me it.
Right.
Yeah, but the thing is that Mars in literature and in the great stream of metaphors and allegories and allophores and metagories, you know, Mars is that place. Jules Verne wrote about it, or was it H.G. Wells? Or was it H.G. Verne? Or was it Verne or H. whoever? You know, the man from Mars, they went to Mars, and John Carter. Wasn't that H.G. Wells or Jules Verne? What was John Carter? Wasn't that John Carter, man from Mars? Anyway, Mars, of course, has always been that planet. Like you'd said in the little blurb we had there for tonight's show, the idea that men from Mars were these little green creatures, or let's face it, War of the Worlds was about Martians, and these guys who wrote this stuff went to places that were, in a sense, farther than they are now. To get that science fiction. You understand? You do. Of course, you guys understand it, right?
I want to bring something up about that. It's very interesting with the man from Mars, is that they tried to do that, to duplicate that farce I don't know exactly where, but somewhere in South America. And the people got hostile, the public, burnt down the radio station. There was a lot of loss of life.
Because the guy did, because they did what? They tried to say what?
They tried to duplicate.
Oh, Orson Welles thing, you mean?
Welles did, yeah, absolutely.
The radio thing, yeah, yeah. People they did, were, and people got, they were pissed.
Absolutely. They burnt down the radio station.
How do we know it was them and not the Martians?
Well, we're all Martians.
No, I'm actually,
that actually brings me back to a film from, I'd say, the 90s, I would say. Mm-hmm. It was on some anniversary of the War of the Worlds broadcast, mm-hmm. and I think it was CBS that he made for TV movie, and it was called Without Warning. And the premise of the movie was that there was this massive, and this kind of brings us back to our topic, this massive asteroid headed for the Earth. Mm-hmm. And but it was just like War of the Worlds. It was presented as a news broadcast that had cut in on the regular program. Mm,
oh, okay, okay.
And so CBS was getting these calls left and right, saying, you know, despite the fact that there was disclaimers at every commercial break, they were getting these calls at every commercial break about, you know, oh my God, so and so, you know, this is going to happen. And, oh my God, we're all going to die. This is true. So it, you know, there's a certain power in the media, as you and I are both well aware.
I had first source. Stories about that because my mother lived in Kearney, New Jersey at the night of that broadcast and with her step family. She didn't know it was a step family at the time, but that's not pertinent to this particular piece of information that I'm telling you. The point is she was with her family and they were, some of them were older, and they did the same thing. None of them stopped to think. In other words, that panic, that really happened. And, mm-hmm. and they were all worried because they lived near the swamp. They lived near the place where the Martian supposedly landed. And I'm, I was always trying to think like, wow, you know, what would we have thought if we were there? It's like, wow, they actually thought this happened. That was happening at the time. Orson didn't intend to make it a scare like this. And a couple of people actually killed themselves. But they were looking for an excuse anyway, I imagine. They just, as psychology has told us, we're looking for an excuse. The guy's sitting around completely, he's drunk. I guess it's just liquor's not killing me. And I've tried to, and I live on the first floor. I can't jump out the window. I can't. I got hijacked. And what Martians? Ah! They killed themselves. Yeah. That's probably what that happened. But my mother told me, and described it, and she was not, my mother was not verbose, nor was she particularly intelligent in terms of descriptions. But there was a certain emotion that she used when she told me about it. That when I was younger, when I found out about it, as her being a witness, that was a frightening thing. And what, you know, what does human nature tell us? We really wanted to believe that, didn't we?
Oh yeah,
in a way, yes.
Yeah. And today. What? Go ahead, Scott.
Say, regardless of whether they're you know, malicious or friendly, it's still kind of a neat thought to feel that we're not the only ones in the entire universe. And I think that's where that came from.
Well, it's frightening. They want people don't want to be challenged, though. I don't think. They don't really want to be challenged because that challenges everything people believe. But unless they come up with an excuse for it, and of course they would. But I think we're just all it's fear. It's just scared. We're scared. We're scared in our the bottom of our bowels, to the bottom of our bowels. We're scared.
I don't think I've ever been scared of my bowels before.
Oh, yes, you'd be surprised. Dr. Woldar and Skyer. Dr. Woldar, let me ask you, speaking of writing stuff, are you working on anything theory-wise or book-wise or article-wise that will shake the bowels of science or math world?
I'm always working on something. I don't know how earth-shattering anything that I'm doing right now is. You know, you cannot tell, really. But always busy.
So you're like me in a sense that you're like I am in a sense. You probably have all these composition books and all these notes or whatever sitting around, and you write, you scribble down things like, wow, if the atom split four times and turned into a shape of an apple, then this would mean that. And you probably have all these things. I'll have to get into that later. Like I have gigantic, I have all these books around with ideas and things that never come to fruition. Do you have?
No, actually, you don't. I don't. Okay. No, it's a totally different system. I don't take notes. I keep everything in my head.
Oh, that's bad.
And it is bad. It is bad.
That is really bad.
I'm getting older, you know, and my memory's not what it, you know. But when I have to commit to writing a paper, it's different. And what happens is I still don't have notes, but I begin to directly write the paper into my text editor. Mm. You know, I use this thing called LaTeX. And, that's where the whole thing, actually comes. But and I'll do a lot of calculations. I'll do calculations, but I never say the work. And, you know, I'm awful like that. I mean, cause I have friends, I have colleagues who use notebooks and everything is so neat and orderly. I'm just the opposite.
Sky, what do you think in terms of your academia? Do you think you ever sit back and go, you know what? I think I'd like to write this thing about Venus leaving our, now I'm talking about science fiction. I'm just trying to make up some idea that, you know, wild thing. What about you?
I don't know that I ever had any particular, you know, theories in my head that needed to come out so much as my brain just never stopped working. It was always coming up with something that seemed cool to me, even if no one had ever, you know, come up with it before, even if it didn't necessarily have a scientific background to it. The brain just never shut off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean because I have a problem, but it never really results in anything spectacular, earth-shattering, as because I'm not in that world. I don't have the information pumped into me that you guys have pumped into your brains. So what am I going to come up with? I'm watching the news tonight and I go, well, who's going to – Morgan Freeman is terrible playing Nelson Mandela. That shouldn't be him. This is what I'm thinking. I'm casting movies. I'm thinking of – you know, I mean, nothing. You guys are – you know, what goes on in your head is completely different, right?
Yeah, well, it's a lot more than information, though. What happens is in order to think – you have to actually learn to think a certain way. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to process things a certain way. Sometimes you have to study for years, just to be able on a particular subject, not to gain information, but to develop intuition. And they're really different things. Of course, information, the more information you have, the better off you'll be at developing intuition. Mm-hmm. But if you just have information and that's all you have, then there's no innovation that's going to come out of you.
Yeah, okay. I'll buy that, but I wouldn't. In other words, here's what amazes me. And this is indeed, I think the word amaze definitely defines this. I sit around and I will put things in notes and I have notebooks by my bed because I wake up and I go, oh, wow, this is a weird. And I write these absolutely ridiculous things. And I mean that in the sense of like, you know, in terms of mankind, they're just ridiculous. It's just more junk put into the cauldron of junk that people, you know, that writing things, the literature, humor, whatever. But I do all that stuff and I find it, you know, real difficult. And then I follow through. I mean, I write things like, you know, if I could write important stuff at the pace that I do nonsense and don't get me, and don't think that, you know, they say like, well, it's nonsense. Of course you could do a lot, because that's not true, because there's people out there who are, you know, very talented. They can't do a thing. And I'm this like machine, you know, and I just have this, and I do it. And I love it because I love doing it. I do it. If anybody wants to read it, it's fine. It's good. I do this stuff. And I can't imagine how there are people out there, who actually know things. And not just going to entertain you with a turn of a phrase or anything, know things and have ideas like this even if I read the guy was going to talk about Men from Mars, you think I'm going to get in my car, fill the tank up, I don't know who I'm talking to. Kids, hey, kids, fill the tank up. We're going to hear this guy talk about Martians that are us. It's not going to happen, you know? Because it's not part of my consciousness. But you guys have all this stuff from Villanova and all this academic, these things you read. You still read these incredible things. I can't imagine why you're not writing stuff, why you don't have your own little website or blogs about stuff. Gosh darn it, why don't you do it?
Personally, I'm just preoccupied with everything else in my life, to be honest with you.
Everything else. Well, okay. But so am I, though. That's what I mean. Nothing stops me. And I don't understand why you guys really can make a difference and really talk smart and do things, how you can't contribute more to all of us by writing stuff. I don't know. I just don't get it. And I know that's a self-reflection. It's a reflection on me, not a reflection on you guys. Because I'm
I mean, maybe if we had your energy. I don't think anyone, I've never met anyone who has your energy.
Seriously.
I don't understand that, but that's what I mean. I just don't understand that, but.
It's a gift.
Every gift has its curse side. Well, no, it's not a curse. I'm fine. I mean, I go with it. I'm just amazed. I don't know. And I'll never figure it out. I'll just keep doing what I'm doing. And I want to be around when the sun burns out.
That'd be quite a task.
Well, yeah, I know. Because it's ridiculous. It's like, why don't I have to see if everybody's going to, not that I go when everybody goes. That's not the point. I don't even know who's going to be here. The thing is, I'm going to miss this. I don't want, but anyway, you guys are great. And we're going to do this again. I know you're all busy and stuff, so it's tough to get this together, but we can get it together. Again, because there'll be another topic here and there, Doc. You always
most definitely.
You're on the cutting edge of really reading this stuff and knowing what's going on. So you're telling us about it, and you know everything you tell me, whether it permeates into something important or not important. I take it with me. So that's why I love talking to people like you guys, because I don't necessarily have. I don't remember the difference between the neo-Nikrons and I just know that I will never forget playing ping pong on a moving train, you know, and that means something to me. And so I know that people out there, though they're listening sometimes and going, what is that? What is a neutron? What a micronon? And a thing that they are getting something because I get a lot of good mail. So I want you guys on again. And I want to wish you a happy whatever you do.
Yes. Same to you.
Because we're not going to be talking to you until after that. So you have a happy whatever you do. Give us one last, any last things you want to say about any of the stuff? You got a minute or so about any of this and anything at all. How about anything at all? Sky, just telling everybody to listen to Hot Splash or whatever.
What?
I said Hot Splash. I said, I know. See, it just comes out of my head. Hot Spot.
Yes, Hotspot Radio, of course, every Wednesday, 9:30 Eastern on SRN1. This coming Wednesday is your one and only opportunity to hear holiday music on HSR, because we know that you get bombarded with it everywhere else this time of year. We restrict it to just one show. So if you want to hear some rather obscure, usually, Christmas songs or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Yule or anything else that happens this time of year, come on over. And Frank, just since I won't be on that particular show, I just want to give a proper bit of respect to a mutual friend of all three of ours, Rick, for the Bone Garden, since I won't be there. We miss you, bud. Thank you so much for giving me my start. I wouldn't be who I am without you.
Mr. Doc, what say you?
Well, first, amen to that about Rick. We all miss him terribly, actually. And not much else to say. I just wish you and wish Sky and wish the entire listening audience a happy and healthy holiday. And we'll see you on the other side.
And when he means the other side, friends, he's talking about 2014, all right? Because we all want to be here on that side, not the other side of the side. Thank you guys very much. Same to you. Thank you for being so loyal and supporting everything we do, whatever it is the hell we do here, okay?
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Good night, good afternoon, good morning.
And a good night, Mrs. Ernstwell, wherever you are.
Wherever you are. Oh, it's almost – who's that? That's what?
That's Mr. Cattolo over there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Okay. Here we go. Good night, guys.
Good night, Frank.
Biddy, go. Ta-ta. Oh, don't you love it? Mr. Kirschvink! Good night, Mr. Kirschvink, and a happy everything to you. My name is Frank Cattolo, the man's name adorns the title of the show. Thank you, Dr. Waldar. And almost Dr. Hall. Sky Hall. It sounds like a place I played. On tour, I'll be at Sky Hall, and then I've got this. We're going now. We're out of here. We'll be back next week, and it won't be Steve Olscher. It'll be something else. Just watch. CattoloChronicles.blogspot.com. Go there, find out what's going on, and you will. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you are. If you read, if you buy License to Skill, you'll understand it. Okay, that's it for me. I know I have a lot more, but right now I have nothing more to say.
小村到大市，咸湿屋仔到咸湿中心，是 Cattolo Chronicles。